Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel speeding in!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Okay, here we go. Hey, Cat, hand me a tea, would you, Caddy? I've got to tee up the show.
Boo!
That's so bad. Hi again, everybody. Coming up on today's show with me, Jungle Jim, and Russ Cortinel. Some strange stuff going on in Idaho, where Russ is, about COVID. You know what? We love Canada. Free healthcare. Wait till you hear what Russ has to pay down there. Good God. Golf kicked off, and the players might be playing better without fans. We talk about that. Michael Jordan, best sports documentary, hands down. Russ has something to say about that. And stories from rookie camp. Oh, yes. Yes. That did happen to Russ. That and much, much more coming up on today's show. Give me an S. Give me a U. Give me an S. Yeah, the name's too long, but it's the Suspendables, folks. I forgot how to spell it.
Yeah, I was going to say you'd misspell it.
S-U, what is Sussy Spendable? Sussy. S-U-P.
Oh, God.
Hi again, everybody. Jungle Jim coming at you with Russ Cortinel. For another episode of The Suspendables. Great to have you with us. Rusty, you're there. You're not... this is Sunday afternoon when we taped this, and you're alone now.
Yeah.
In Gosser. This must be like one big, massive beer commercial for you.
Oh, no beer, but lots of White Claws and wine. Oh, my God.
Deep, how many deep today?
I just started, so you just have my first one. Yeah, I took a few hours off.
And are you playing golf?
The weather hasn't been great, so I haven't been playing a lot. I was playing with Brendan Morrow quite a bit. And then this past week, I've been busy with selling stuff. And
making money.
And the weather's been bad, so.
I know here, whatever, the lids come off the can with COVID. Fuck, there's more people kicking around here than anything. It's, you know, like it never happened. Kind of.
Oh.
But the roads are, what's it like? The roads are full, jammed with people, cars everywhere, stores are packed. What's happening there?
You wouldn't even know there was COVID, except if you go to Costco, they, you know, it's nationwide, they make you wear a mask, but
right. You
wouldn't know it. And last night, so I've been here now 2 weeks, and there's always people coming in from different parts of the country. And you know, shaking hands, hugging, kissing. It's like, you know, you go from 2.5 months of nothing, not seeing a person in LA, to now I'm up in Idaho, and it's like the party's on. And the funniest thing I saw last night was I was at the bar with Brendan Morrow, Ray Whitney, and a few other friends, and. Yeah.
Good drinkers there.
They're yeah,
good,
yeah.
Good guys, yeah.
So Moss comes in, Mossimo, and Lori Loughlin, who just pleaded guilty to the university scandal, and they're members. And so they show up.
Are they married, those two?
Yeah, yeah. Their husband, wife, their kid. They got their... Where have you been?
No, I didn't know. Is Mossimo the clothing guy?
Yeah. So they're there last night, and Moss is... I've known Moss for years through Sherwood, and he's a big golfer, and a good guy, and you know, unfortunately, he, you know, did this for his kids and got caught. And so he's there last night, and he's had a couple. Yeah. And he says, I go, isn't it nice to be up here where everybody's, you know, shaking hands and hugging, and instead of being in LA where we were so freaking scared and paranoid and everybody runs from you if they see you. And he goes, yeah, and I hope that I get COVID in about 3 months. Because that's when he has to go to jail for 5 months.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you got five. Well, I think he's getting 5 months.
Yeah.
So he made a joke about COVID and himself, and it right out of the gate, you know, I'm going to just throw it out there. And That's why we love him, because he's just, anyways, we.
what happens, Russ? So I remember meeting that guy years ago at Sherwood, and he had, well, I forget what his clothing thing is, because I know all the TSN guys, when they used to say clothing brought to you by that.
Well, it was Mossimo clothing, and then it was, now it's G4, I think.
Oh, I love that stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's his. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's all his.
And I remember meeting him and shooting the shit on the range and stuff, when, because I love going to Sherwood, and the you know, and I get on the range because there's wealth, right? There's, you know, your life has always been around wealth. I live in Alberta, where there's oil money. Yeah, you've done business there, and in Calgary, I think you did some business, and then you see these guys, right, who are multimillionaires. And there's always, by the time the rumor gets around how much a guy's worth, okay, it's always about 25 times is what he really is.
Yeah.
Know? It's like, see that guy right there? He's got 6 million, right?
Yeah.
And then someone else goes, no, he doesn't. He's got 700 grand. Yeah. And then 30, 40, 50, 100 million, you know, and that's big dough. And then you go down to California, where you are, and you walk on that range, and I remember, you know, so I know at my own golf course where I play, millionaire guys, millionaire, all these guys. There, they're billionaires, you know? I remember going, yeah, that's going to that billionaire.
Yeah.
You know, that guy who owned World Mortgage Corp played golf there. I mean, that company is, you know, I don't know where it is now, but it was big. When your buddy with Mossimo, and this thing happens to us, you got kids in college, you know, scholarship kids. What happens with your opinion of the guy, Russ? What do you, like, after, does the bar sort of drop, or?
Well, two opinions. One is they were doing it out of the love for their kids, trying to get them into school. And it's just, my other is that they took two spots from some other kids that could have got in on their own merit. So I know people will say, this has been going on for years. People buy libraries and this and that.
Right.
And they call it the side door for a reason. So it was, you know, it was a scam. And there was 50, I think they caught 52 families or something. And there was a couple people from Canada that were tied into this guy, Singer. And you'd give him money and then he would pay off a coach or somebody to get in. And yeah, it's embarrassing for sure for them. And I think at Gosser, the thing they like about being up at Gosser is nobody really cares. You know, that they do and they don't. But in L.A., man, she goes out, they go outside, the paparazzi's taking pictures.
And, poor people.
Yeah.
I will say this. When that story broke, I agree with you, right? Half my opinion is, well, you know, people have been making donations for years where it's kind of a given that, okay, there's going to be a little nepotism here. The guy donates $50 million, you know, you know, or people who get jobs because of, you know, certain people that you know or whatever. And when I heard it, it didn't, I wasn't like shocked, you know?
Yeah.
I wasn't shocked. And the other thing I said, there might be, I don't know what the penalty will be, if there is any, or they'll get their hands slapped, or their kids get kicked out of school, which would be the hugest penalty at all, you know, to try and face your kids after. And there were a bunch of stories of, you know, trying to people dive into this relationship now with the mother and the kid. But I never thought there'd be any jail time.
Well, she's getting 2 months and he's getting 5.
Yeah. So don't piss around.
Yeah. That's why he wants COVID. Cause if they have COVID, they can't put him in jail.
I love the guy maintaining his sense of humor.
Oh my God.
I was reading, speaking of COVID, and I want to ask you this. So there's a guy who ends up in the hospital for 62 days, an older guy, and a lot of people were dying when COVID hit, especially seniors who are the most vulnerable. This guy survives, wasn't supposed to, and survives 60 plus days and gets released. And he's kind of like, that was just this huge joy, you know, from the hospital and the staff who got to know him so well, and they thought he wouldn't make it, and he did. The other side is Russ. He gets a bill for $1.1 million.
Oh.
Okay. Oh. I did the math. It was something like $15,000 a day. And it's like hilarious stuff on Twitter. You know, because when the guy left the hospital, they had all the staff there applauding, you know, and the guy said, yeah, it was the CEO and the fucking finance guy, you know, the fundraiser, you know, the guy raising all the dough for it. And it made me think, Canada, of course, is got the massive healthcare program that we love and we're known for, and you're Canadian and you're American. How's the health insurance thing work there, Russ, for you?
Oh my God, it's expensive. So
just before you go, so if you're listening and you're from the States, okay, it's free here in Canada. Okay? It doesn't cost you anything. Okay,
I figured it was costing me and my family after taxes, $28,000 a year. So that's what it was costing me. And then now I'm an employee of Discovery, so they're paying. I'm under their plan, so now I think I'm paying $1,200 a month.
Really?
So it dropped in probably almost in half. But I just don't know how the average person of
$1,200 a month a person.
No, $1,200 for my family, but before it was costing me about $2,200 a month or something.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm paying $13 something, but it was almost $28,000 a year. It's just crazy. When I first retired, I think we were paying like $400 a month or something, and then it just Obamacare came in and it just started going through the roof.
I'm getting sick on purpose just to get my dough's worth.
But then and then you're dealing with insurance, right? So my son blows his finger. He tears all the tendons up here in Gawser one summer, and we take him into the hospital, and they've got, "Do you got insurance?" "Yeah, here's my card." "Oh, great, great. Okay, sit over there. But operation tomorrow, great doctor, unbelievable facility." Comes out of there, his finger's fine. Insurance has been declined. And I'm like, "What?" we don't consider that an emergency. You could have flown home to California and had the operation there. So I ended up, I had insurance. I don't have insurance.
Wow.
So yeah, if it's non-emergency, you have to have it in the state that you're paying your insurance. I mean, it's just, it's a joke. It really is a joke.
It's one of my, speaking of jokes, one of my favorite is Newfoundland, okay, a province, okay, here in Canada, was they were a holdout to join Confederation, okay, and they didn't want to do it. They were the last province to join, whenever they did, and they finally got convinced, you know, that we've got this massive healthcare program though, and so they're pleading with them, "You got to join, man," and they're going, "What do you mean?" Yeah, they go, "It's free." He goes, "Free shmee, what do you mean free health? It's all free, right?" And the guys, and then they say, "Okay, we're going to do it." So the guy gets his health card in the mail, the noof, and he goes to the doctor and he goes, "I got my health card right here, okay? Free health care right now, okay? Health care, schmealth care. I want a castration. I want it right now." And the girl goes, "No, you don't want it." He goes, "I want a castration. It doesn't cost anything." She goes, "You don't." He keeps screaming. The doctor goes, "I'm castrated." He goes, "Fine, fuck, we'll do it." Okay. So he has the operation, and the next morning, the guy wakes up in bed and he's just in incredible pain and he's keeled over at the waist and he's going, "Jesus Christ," you know, and he looks beside him. There's another guy in the other bed and he says, "What are you in here for?" And the guy goes, "Circumcision." He goes, "That's the word. Fuck."
Oh, that hurt just listening to that joke.
Yeah,
sitting on my chair.
I've probably told it before, but no. Anyway, I always wondered about the healthcare thing there. So
Newfoundland was the last province to join.
Absolutely, Rush. You know me with facts. I wouldn't make up a thing. Yeah.
I guess nobody in the rest of Canada was going out there to pressure them.
I'll tell you what, I've been down there lots.
Oh my God, it's so much fun.
It's so, you know what? Oh my God. Like there's Western hospitality. You know what? They're nice. They're friendly people here, right? Oh. The slow speed. It's what people get out of Toronto for, because it's just so fast paced and everyone's in your way. And when people come out west, they get to relax, you know? But the most friendly, okay, it's almost like it's an act, is the people in Newfoundland. I remember landing there to do a gig and sitting around with these guys, you know, drinking. And the guy's going, so what's going on, Jimmy? Right? I said, well, I'm just here. I'm doing the charity thing tonight. He goes, well, you'll stay at the house then. I said, I didn't know who the guy was, Russ.
Yeah, I know. I go, that's why I'm laughing.
It's like, he goes, yeah, you got to stay at the fucking house. I said, I'm not staying at your house. I don't even, where are you staying? I said, a hotel, like everyone else who visits, you know. Hotel, no way. Come and stay at the house, you know. Yeah. We've got a big kitchen party. Anyway, best people ever. Like I told you, they're so friendly. I offered to buy a girl a beer there. She says, you buy me a beer. I said, yeah. She goes, you got condoms? That's friendly, Russ, okay? Yeah. That is friendly, my friend.
Well, when I did the gold medal plates, help, you know, raise money for Canadian athletes, I went on all these trips around the world and with all these different Canadian couples. So Ian Leggett and I and Val Beery are hosting all these Canadians at Pebble Beach, and I'm in the tap room drinking with a bunch of the players, and Ian Leggett's in the restaurant with Christopher Hickman from Newfoundland and four of his buddies. And so you can imagine, like, the thick accents and hooper and holler. And he goes, Russ, he texts me. He goes, you got to get your ass in here right now. I'm drinking beer in the tap room with these other guys, right?
Yeah.
He goes, you won't believe the wine we're drinking. So I get up. I go, okay guys, I got to go over here and meet some of the other people on the trip. So I walk in the restaurant, and I can smell cigarette smoke. I'm like, you can't smoke in California inside. And there in the corner are four or five Newfoundlanders and Ian Leggett, and they have about six bottles of wine decanted in separate decanters.
Right.
And all the staff, the servers, are standing around them. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? I walk over there. I sit down. I meet them all. And I've seen them over the first couple of days, but I meet them again, sit down. And they're like, I can't do the accent, but Russ, would you like some Screaming Eagle? And I'm like, Screaming Eagle? Oh my God. That's like $2,000 a bottle in the store, let alone in a restaurant.
Oh, I was going to say it was the other way. If they're new,
no, it was $2,000. And so then I learned that Christopher Hickman is one of the biggest builders in Newfoundland. So he's built hospitals and schools and buildings, and great guy. And his buddies are all start telling Christopher Hickman stories, you know, in Newfoundland. And then I'm like, I asked the waiter, I said, I go, can you talk to me for a second? I go, how are they all smoking? And he goes, when you see the bill, we'd let these guys do anything. Our tip is going to be off the charts. And these guys were all just cigarettes, wine, telling stories about this. And so that was one of my first experiences with a few Newfoundlanders on this trip. It was great fun.
If you've never been there, okay, you just can't imagine really how laid back they are. How and I don't mean simple as in stupid, you know. I mean, they just lead a very, you know, simple life. They don't ask for much, you know. And I remember when I went there, those are my blurry days, Russ. So I'm going 1,000 miles an hour. I was doing a gig for Danny Murphy, big Tim Hortons franchise guy. And he said, he pulled me aside, you know, and he said he was raising a bunch of money for kids and underprivileged kids. And he said, now, Jimmy, I know the way you go. When these guys say hi to you, you know, when you're walking through the crowd or whatever, you got to stop. Okay. You can't just blow them off and go and because I'm going 100 miles an hour. And he said, you got to give them time, you know. And I said, what? Okay. And in my head, I'm going, whatever, Danny, you know. And so I'm on stage. I finish the bit and I want to go I want to go smoke, Russ. Okay. I want to go outside and smoke. And I'm walking through the crowd, and a guy goes, a guy says to me, he goes, hey, pretty fucking funny there, eh, bud? And I go, yeah, thanks a lot. And he goes, what's your name? I said, listen, I'll be right back. I just got to go have a weed. And he goes, oh, big fucking star, are you now? So, Rusty, we had some live sports this weekend. I'm sure some of you guys were watching the golf. The Colonial was on. The big Ben, where Ben Hogan's from. Tough tournament. So two things everyone's been talking about. One is the players have been laid off now for 3 months. They haven't played. And one is no crowds. Okay? No fans at all allowed on the golf course. And everyone's beginning to talk about, this is weird, man. This is going to be, even the players, right? I don't know how this is going to go, but it's going to be no good, you know? It won't be any good. So I started watching it. I don't know. I've watched, you know, an hour or two each day. And the second I turned it on, I looked and went, oh, yeah, right, there's no fans, right? And after that, Russ, I totally forgot about it. I didn't find it bad as a viewer.
I watched a little bit. When Rory made that sand shot and chipped it in.
I saw the highlight.
Yeah. And there's no audience clapping. I just wish they had, like, even fake audio. Like,
yeah.
That was weird to me because if they were watching, they would have went nuts.
Right. That's true.
And that's the only thing I guess I missed was the gallery.
Well, you do know, you're right. You do notice it there, but it didn't, after a while, I kind of forgot about it.
Yeah.
You know, that there were no fans. The other thing, Russ, that's completely interesting, you're a pro athlete at a very high level, is a lot of them are saying this is going to be, you know, how much rust are these guys going to have? Speaking of rusty, how much rust are they going to have on their swings and stuff? Fuck, Russ, it was the lowest scores I've seen in a long time in a golf tournament. You know, the guys, there was a playoff at 15 under. Sort of 2 hours before the end of the tournament, there was 20 guys within two shots. So much for not playing golf for 3 months.
Well, that's why it's a game, not a sport.
Oh, ooh, the little zinger from the hockey player.
Well, it's like, okay, darts, right? Is that a sport? Is that a game? Pool? Curling?
The interesting thing I'm making, the point I'm making here.
When you can smoke a cigar and drink and play the game, it's not a sport.
Well, you probably smoke cigars in the locker room.
I wish. I smoked during COVID, I smoked a cigar in the house. Oh, my God. It took about 3 days to get the smell out. Paris was pissed.
Oh, and Paris would have gone ballistic.
She gave me the, you know what? It's your house. You do what you want. So I sat by the fireplace, lit the fire, and I, you know, I thought it was going to draw up, and of course it didn't. So even my youngest daughter was like, it smells in my bedroom.
Cigar smoke, though. It's nice.
It's just the next day it's not nice. I get it.
Anyway, Russ, do you think there's anything to guys playing really good golf? Forget the fact they've been off, okay? Forget the fact. Yeah. But the incredibly low scoring average in this tournament.
Yeah.
Do you think they play better because of no fans out there?
Oh, because there's no pressure.
There's no pressure. A million guys were within five shots.
That's a really good question because, I'm just sitting here, thinking about them putting pressure on themselves. You know, you hear athletes saying, oh, the most pressure put on me is by me and, you know, I focus and I don't see anything. I don't hear anything. And I wonder if depth perception and then the galleries, how they narrow some of the freeways.
Yeah.
Freeways. God, I've only had one White Claw. The fairways are narrow because of all the crowds and maybe because it's wide open and they see this massive fairway and rough and trees. Maybe that relaxes them and they've got, you know, they're not worried about hitting it left or right and bonking somebody on the head.
You know, there's your elite guys, right? The 80-20 rule. 80% of the dough goes to the top 20 guys, you know, or 80 out of 100 goes to the top 20. And, you know, Rory was in there for a bit and then kind of faded in the end. Rory DJ didn't even make the cut. Jordan Spieth, okay, has been under the gun here for 2 years, okay? Mm-hmm. And fans have been on that guy like shit. You know, they've been killing him. The press has been killing him and all that. Anyway, he had a great tournament.
Oh, good. I got to see him last year here at Gozer. And what a nice guy. Oh, my gosh. I've met him at McKenna.
Right.
And I got to see him again here. And, you know, I when you meet somebody like that and they're nice, you just really want them to do well. And he's a good kid.
I heard he was.
Yeah.
And they have fun, him and Ricky Fowler and Smiley Kaufman and Kevin Kistner. These guys are a riot on social media. Yeah. Anyway, I just thought, you know, the guy who wins, Daniel Berger, beats Colin Morikawa. They're young guys. They're still in their 20s. They're not absolutely no names. You know, they've been around for a while. But you wonder if some of these other guys who find a huge pressure when they get on a hole and there's 10,000 people.
And isn't that funny? Because hockey players, football players, baseball players want fans. It sucks when there's no fans.
Yeah.
You play, when you're in front of a great audience, you just want to perform. And then your point maybe is right, that the pressure, they don't feel as much pressure because the people aren't there.
Anyway, Daniel Berger goes on to win that event. He plays off against Colin Morikawa, who's a rookie. He's only 23. Daniel Berger's only 28 or 9.
Wow.
Morikawa came on. He won. He's won already on the tour. And Xander Schauffele jerks a little 2.5-footer coming down the stretch, okay? And misses this putt, like maybe 2.5 feet. So he's out of it. Morikawa, that means Morikawa gets in. He's into the playoff. Schauffele misses birdie on 18, so he can't get in. So off he goes. It's par 4, first playoff hole. Morikawa hits it right into the shit. Berger's down the middle. Berger flips his on just over the back of the green, about 10 feet from the hole. And Morikawa hits it up in the fringe, way short of the green because he's in trouble. And he knocks it to 2 feet, 2.5 feet. Okay. Mm-hmm. Berger knocks it a foot, taps in for 4. Morikawa misses the 2-footer to stay in the playoff.
Okay? Oh my God.
Now, Russ, that's probably a $400,000 miss.
Yeah.
In golf. And it's like, oof.
For a young guy just starting out too, right?
Well, it just, yeah. Like, I mean, it's
early in your career. I mean, these, you know, Dustin Johnson, Rory, Tiger, you know, $400,000 to them. It's a shitload of money, but at that point in their career, it's more about winning than it is about the money. And these poor young guys, it's all about the money and winning.
Well, yeah, like DJ and those guys, where they backhand in fucking putts,
well,
right?
They don't give a shit if it's $100,000. You know, they're making $20 million a year and plus on endorsements. So
sure, they make lots. You've played golf, Russ. Yeah. What's the most amount of money you've ever played for?
I beat Paul Redham for $3,600.
Not bad.
And he had the two Kentucky Derby winning horses from Windsor. Go. Lives in L.A. or lives in down south of California, and as a member at Sherwood. And I told this story before. When
he had two horses win the Kentucky Derby?
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah, I'll Have Another and Nyquist, was it?
Oh, I remember that. I'll Have Another.
And then he had a third. Didn't he pull, pulled up lame? Was it Nyquist that pulled up lame? But he won two Kentucky Derbies, I know that much.
That's because the jockey was betting on the other horses.
But he and I played the hammer game. We're high handicaps. I've told this story where Hammer. And it was when I used to play a lot of golf, and he and I were both high handicaps, so the hammer just got out of control.
Yep.
And so the money kind of went back and forth. And then this one day, I just kept winning, and he couldn't get me. And then, of course, you know, he wins it back, you know, like Vegas. But that's the most amount of money I think I've ever won on the golf course. It's $3,600. And now I play for like $20. I don't like to gamble on the golf course. I like to gamble, but in a smaller amounts. Like, I like to play where you might win or lose 100 or 200 or max 300, but I just want to hang out with the guys. I want it to be competitive and fun, and I just don't play well enough anymore where it's just, for me, it's not,
you don't want to lose a G note or something. It takes the fun out of it.
I don't play enough. Like, if you play with the same group, you can, the money can go back and forth. And the other day I'm sitting at the bar, shocker, having a drink, and Brendan Morrow and Ray Whitney, John Elway.
They like the action.
Mike Simo and Joe, another, he's going to kill me if he listens to our show. But so the five of them roll in and I go, how was your golf round? Which one? And I went, oh boy. So it was just starting to get dark and they were playing Wolf and he missed a putt. This Uh-oh. One guy missed a putt, 2-footer on 17. And
normally a gimme, but not in those big games.
Yeah. And so Ray won like 2,200. Brendan won 500. Elway won like 300. And this guy won 100. And the one guy was sitting, I go, what are you doing? He goes, Venmo. And he's just like, he's sending everybody money.
Well, that's like e-transfer money or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brendan doesn't like to play for a lot of money, but he'll play because he's really good. And right. same with, I don't know if Wiz is a big gambler, but anyways, they had a blast. They came in, they ordered food, and the guy who lost said, you know what? I won all this money last week, and then it just keeps filtering around, but I don't like playing like that anymore.
Right. I'll tell you a true story and the biggest sting ever, and you're going to love this because, so when I moved here in the mid-80s, I joined a golf course, Edmonton Country Club, and I was a good player back then, and I loved the action. And I got into this game. I showed up at the tee. I was a new member, and I knew what they call the animals. You know, the animals are at every club. The guys who get the 1 o'clock tee time, big action guys. And my partner was Craig McTavish. Okay, who's of course everyone knows, great NHL player. So I don't know what the bets are. I don't know what the games are. Okay, we're going to play the triple game, Aggie, high low, best ball. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. Yeah, no problem. Because I've been a low handicap, so you don't lose very often, you know?
Right.
And if you do, you don't lose that much, you know?
Right.
But you mostly win when I was like a 3-4 handicap.
Nobody likes a bragger, anyways.
So, McTee's at 12 or something like that. And I'm a 4. Let's say I'm a 4.
Right.
And so McTee looks at me and goes, what are we playing for? And I go, you know what? Fuck, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what the exposure is. I'm not sure, you know? And he goes, okay, fuck, I'm cool, you know? And so off we go. And you know, we play the first couple of holes and I par the first two. McTee makes a birdie and I hear the two guys we're playing against. Now you're matching cards with the other groups too, okay?
Yeah.
And the two guys we're playing against, they go to the cart and the guy's going, Jesus! To his partner, right? This is only two holes in. He goes, there's 100.5. Right? And after his buddy jerks a putt. So McTee looks at me and goes, what do you got us into here, Jim? Right? I'm going, I don't know. Just play, man. Just fucking play, okay?
Yeah.
So they're marking the cards and we're automatic presses and 3 down, 2 down, a best ball, this shit. Anyway, we go on. McTee shoots 78, okay?
Oh, my God.
Now he's a 12.
Oh, okay. My God. He's not making any friends.
Now, I'm not making this up, Russ. I'm not making this up. I shoot the lowest round of my life.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah, I shoot 3 under. Okay? Yeah. I was like the priest on Caddyshack. Couldn't miss.
Yeah.
And no one's happy. Okay?
Yeah.
Except me and McTee.
Yeah.
And now comes time to pay. Okay?
Yeah.
And so we're sitting outside at the bar, and the one guy walks over. He goes, yeah, I matched the cards. I did it. And whips off fucking 1,100. Okay? Okay? Okay, to me.
Yeah.
Okay, to me. And another 11 to freaking McTee for like a group or two. I go, so they just keep coming, Russ, okay? And we end up winning, okay? I'm not lying. We end up winning between us $7,800.
Oh, okay? My gosh.
Okay, huge. Almost $8,000. Almost 4,000 each. And it's kind of weird because I'm dating my ex-wife at the time and her father is in the game and he's looking at me going, who are you? You know, what the fuck? And we end up winning all this cash. And they say, well, let's go for dinner. You know, you're going to buy drinks, right? Well, let's go for, yeah, no problem, boys. Yeah, let's go for dinner. And like 15 guys show up. Okay.
Hungry, thirsty.
Hungry. Not only that, it's Grand Marnier. It's fucking...
they're getting their money back.
Courvoisier, cognac.
Yeah.
Okay. We haven't even eaten yet.
Yeah.
Okay. And we go, we'll get it, boys. You know, and I'm looking at McTee going, okay, this is good here. And they get us, okay? They get us for 4,800. Okay. Like the bill comes and guys are taking shit to go. And one of the veterans of the game taps me on the shoulder, goes, don't ever do that again.
Yeah.
Don't. I said, fuck, it was my career round. You know, I never. Okay, Russ, I played in that game for years. Never, ever did I see anyone go for dinner after.
Yeah.
It was the only time. What else we got, Rusty? On your advice to me, you said you got to sit down and you got to watch the Michael Jordan Netflix special. And so I tuned in, and I love documentaries. Have you watched all of it, Russ?
Oh, I love it.
Okay, I love them, and they're my most favorite on all the streaming stuff. And I tuned into this thing, and I was hooked, man. I think I've probably heard enough about how great Michael Jordan is. I didn't think this thing would do it for me, and
I felt the same because I'm not a huge basketball fan.
It's the most inside you could ever hear a guy. It's so well done. He's sitting in a chair, narrating this stuff with all the highlights of their. You know, they won. I watched six championships, right? Yep. The Bulls. And Jordan walks you through all of it. The footage is unbelievable. Yeah. I didn't even know Jordan swore until he took you so inside his life.
Yeah.
You know, every situation that people saw and wondered about, they went right back to Jordan and said, here's what was really happening there. He wasn't very well liked by a lot of his teammates, when he, you know, his whole story about coming up through high school, he got cut, man. He got cut from one of his high school teams. And I've never felt that I've been more inside of a guy's life than what Michael Jordan laid down, man, in that special.
It made me think of Wayne, and I wish that they had done that with Wayne, follow him throughout that year. Because that film was made in 1997.
Right.
And they followed the team and him, and then they kept it in the vault, and then he narrated it, you know, in the last year, it looks like. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there watching it, and I just wish that we had an inside like that on Wayne Gretzky, because that show was so good. There's some things for me, like just how competitive he was and driven, and the, you know, lose that one series, and then they're all in the gym the next day working out. And I'm like,
right.
Reckon every other team, like, and me included, well, where are we going on vacation, win or lose? Like,
right. Right.
You know, you're thinking of taking a month off. And then the other one was him smoking cigars in his hotel room on the plane. Like, the guy was smoking cool. cigars when he was an athlete, where a lot of us, like Gretz and myself and others, started smoking cigars after our careers, you know. And he's like, right there in the couch in the suite of his hotel, getting interviewed, just sucking back a Cohiba. Like, it's, you know.
It looks good on him, though. I got to admit.
Oh, my God.
He looks good, man.
Everything was great. I loved it.
You know, speaking of, one of the really interesting things that will probably surprise people, you know, after you watch it, is everyone, you know, he's claimed to be, certainly the best basketball player ever, but one of the best athletes of all time, okay? Yeah. Of all time, from what he did. He was renowned. He's probably the most biggest household name in all of sports, maybe. Mm-hmm. Muhammad Ali might be bigger, but Jordan was known around the world, and kids wanted his shoes. And there's 10 shows, and each show covers sort of a different segment of his life. You know, when you look back at it, it's like one is his business side, family. There was a big portion of it talking about his gambling that he does. He's a huge gambler. Mm-hmm. And you've told a story about him before. But boy, does he handle, he takes that shit head on. He lets them ask him the question about it.
I loved his answer to the gambling when they said, do you have a gambling problem? And he said, no, I have a competitive problem.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, he was very funny.
And emotional too. Remember when he said, break. And he got up, he was crying, he was starting to well up because he just watched his teammate say he was a jerk and he was an asshole. And I'm assuming that's what made him upset, because he said, if you don't like the way I compete and play, then don't don't play or something like that.
Right.
It was something along those lines. This is how it is. And if you don't like it, go play somewhere else.
Well, the other thing that was really cool is all that footage, they would have players interviewing other players or have footage of them talking in the locker room. You know, guys that played against Jordan who weren't real happy about Jordan, right? It was like the Tagger thing, right? It's like, shut up about Tagger. Okay, he's really good. And Jordan was like that, right? And some players were interviewed way back when, and they said, you know, enough about the guy or something like that. Or, you know, he's okay, but he's not the nicest guy out there, or it's all about him. Well, that fucking thing, they take that tape and they show it to Jordan during the tape in, right? Yeah. They put it on an iPad.
Yeah.
They hand the iPad to Michael Jordan and they go, listen to this, you know?
Uh-huh.
And he reacts to it. The other thing I took away from there, Russ, and you talked about it a couple shows ago, about how competitive guys are who don't settle for anything but winning all the time.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Yeah.
Even when they do win a Stanley Cup, the next thing is, we got to win another one. And you know, Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux and these guys are super competitive like you were. But you always said that's what separates the good from the bad. There's guys who settle for, okay, I've done it. That's good. Whether I win a cup again. Michael Jordan is the most competitive I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Ever. Ever. Yeah. How about he's in their locker room there, Russ, and they're throwing coins against the wall to try and
get I love that.
Okay.
Closest to the wall.
Yeah, not only that, it's with security guys or something. Okay.
Yeah, for like, he's playing the three of them.
For 20. For 20 bucks.
Yeah. And he like, show me your money.
No, put the money up, he says first.
Yeah, put the money up.
Put the dough up front. It's this little security guard who makes about $11,000 every 6 years. And Jordan gets it closer. He sort of walks away, and then he comes back and goes, oh, yeah, right, and grabs the 20, right? He was competitive playing cards. He was competitive on the golf course. And anyway, I think it's just – I've watched a bunch of sports documentaries, and this thing is award-winning. There's no doubt about it.
For sure.
Have you met him before, Russ?
I have. I had dinner with him last year at Gosser, although there was like 30 people at the dinner, but I sat across from him – he was two people over across the table, and I was trying to listen in on everything he said, and the person beside me kept wanting to chat. I'm like, I wanted to say, would you fuck off right now? Because I just want to listen to this guy talk.
Some
I don't
want
to hear. And there was Gretz was at the table, and Massimo was there, and our CEO, Mike Meldman, and JJ Dudum, and a bunch of other athletes, you know who's in the movie there? Rashad,
who did the interviews. Ahmad Rashad.
Yeah, he was there. And
were you starstruck, Russ? Did that guy knock you out a little bit when you're in the same room?
Michael Jordan?
Yeah.
I mean, of course, I don't know if I'm starstruck because I'm just, I probably would be now after watching the documentary. I'd be more intrigued. But of course, you're sitting across from Michael Jordan. It's freaking cool as shit. But you know, there's some amazing people around here, John Elway, Wayne Gretzky. I guess being around Gretz, I don't get the feeling around Michael that I get around Wayne. And it's weird because Wayne and I are so close, but he has that aura about him. It's so cool when he walks into a room and people are just like, oh my God, there's Wayne Gretzky. And I'm going, yep. And that's my friend. And it's so freaking cool.
Right.
As you know, the same feeling when you're around him.
Sure.
But it was good. It's just the freaking person beside me thought it was, you know, dinner talk. And I'm like, no. I want to listen to this guy over here.
Pipe down.
Yeah.
By the way, you brought up your brother. We had a lot of response from we interviewed your brother last week. Interviewed. It's such a stupid thing. You know, we sat down with Jeff, and he's quite a unique guy, Rusty, huh? Your brother, Jeff. Beats to it. I don't know how to sum him up.
Yeah.
You would know better, but beats to a different drummer, low reactor.
Yeah.
Funny, kind of weird every once in a while.
Yeah. It hasn't had the easiest life. You know, he grew later than most. I talked about that. Didn't get drafted. Just constantly trying to prove himself. You know, the insecurities of great athletes. He's got it. And the head concussion.
Yeah.
The concussion thing's been taking a toll on him.
He'd rather build a fence than go for dinner with someone,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he literally loves working. Like, the guy loves building stuff, so.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys, whoever's out there that loves to build stuff, he's that guy.
Anyway, you can tune in. It was last week's show. They're talking about, before we go, Russ, they're talking about NHL, of course, starting back up. People are saying, well, how are they going to do this? They got to have a training camp. They got to have an off season. Are they going to play 60 games instead of 80 plus games or whatever?
Crazy.
And when I heard the word rookie camp, Russ, I scrambled to my notepad and said, I got to ask Russ about rookie camps. You played in the day, Russ, when guys went into rookie camp or training camp with the idea of, I got to beat the shit out of someone if I'm going to make this team. Was that the real deal back then?
It was so gross. Like when you came to camp,
so gross.
Oh fuck! That my first camp, like Basil McRae was there, and we had all these guys from St. Catharines, and then you know Jim Korn. So you have veterans and rookies trying to make it, and they want to go after the toughest guy, the tough guy after the tough guy, and there was just fight after fight after fight. But the worst thing I ever saw was Kevin Maguire wanted to make the Toronto Maple Leafs, and instead of fighting Bob McGill, he thought he'd fight Wendell Clark.
Oh,
no. And Wendell hit him three times, and I almost puked, and it cut him for 27 stitches total. He hit him, punched him once, and then twice, and then a third time, and Kevin went down like a sack of potatoes, got all stitched up, and the next day dropped his gloves again and wanted to fight Wendell. And Wendell's like, nah, this is... And I think Dan
Maloney... Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no, I'm not kidding. And Dan Maloney's or John Brophy was like, no, don't do this. They stopped it.
He must have made the team.
He did not. Not that year.
Oh, man. They don't do it anymore.
Not at all. And Jeff's son, Justin, turned pro out of college, and he would go to camp, and they would tell all the rookies, you're not allowed to fight. So the non-tough guys were going around sticking guys and cross-checking and, like, you know, chirping off. And he is tough. And he was just like, I want to kill you right now, and I'm not allowed to.
Right.
So, that's the problem with not allowing people to fight, because then the non-fighters are out there whacking and hacking because they don't have to back it up.
Right. Guys on the cusp, Rust, I don't know, did you ever think, when you have a contract, of course, training camp is fucking moot, right? You're going to make the team. Did you like training camp or starting up again, or was it something that you really had to step out of your comfort zone? Okay, I'm going to have to skate faster, harder, hit guys. I'm going to have to do shit that I normally don't do.
I just went out and did my thing, but it got you ready for, you know, it got you ready for the start of the season. And it was hard. It was, you were sore and you played a lot of games. There's 10 exhibition games. You usually played in probably 8 of them. And, it was tough. And then once you start, when you know you're going to make the team, then it's more just about preparation for the season. You're not insecure about making the team. The first couple of years, you're a little insecure, and maybe you're playing a little differently. But once you establish your career and you made it, then it's just a preparation for the season.
But would you go up to the rookies ahead of the first practice and go, okay, easy now, boys. Okay, you're not coming after me.
A couple guys they came into camp in terrible shape.
Frothing.
Yeah. And then this was, you know, probably more like the late 80s. And you're supposed to stay on the ice for a certain amount of time and come off when they blew the horn. That's how they changed the lines.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd have an assistant coach out there dropping the puck like a referee. And these young kids would come off early, and that's when I'd get pissed off at the young kids, because then I'm out there an extra 30 seconds because I would wait for the horn. And I'm like, and the horn, I think, was like a minute and a half.
Right.
And that's a long time to stay on the ice, a minute and a half.
Right.
Young kids were like coming off almost puking because they couldn't stay on the ice that long. Camps were fun because back then you didn't have cell phones. And at the end of the season, everybody goes back to their hometowns across mm-hmm. Canada, the United States, and Europe. And then we all get together in training camp, and it was great. It was fun to see everybody and see who the new kid was trying to take your spot.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's millions of stories about rookie camp, and of course the hazing doesn't happen anymore.
No,
I don't think.
God.
Yeah, you had your balls shaved. I think that's a good note to end on the end of the. End. Yeah. What a treat.
Yeah,
you haven't arrived till you had your balls shaved. Rusty, another one in. We're 2-3 White Claws. That's good. That's a good show for you. And what's up for the rest of the week now? What are you doing?
I don't. I'm working. I'm selling stuff. I just sold one during the show. I wrote, texted an offer in for a lot. A buddy's buying. So, closing my house tomorrow. My spec house that I built up here at Gosser. So hopefully that goes smoothly tomorrow, and on to the next one.
Whatever. Anyway, fuck. Sometimes I don't like you. You know. Sometimes I just don't. Right. It's like I closed. How about that, Stevie, our producer? I closed one while I was doing the show here. Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. We wouldn't want to be interrupted.
I just had him write the offer. It was pretty simple.
All right. Yeah. So. You'll do well. You'll close that.
Yeah.
If you ever need a Russ, if you need a closer, just bring me in. Okay.
Oh my God.
No, don't. Okay, Rusty, you have yourself a good week. Thanks everyone for listening. It's been we're over 50 episodes now, and we're going to do interviews about every second week. So I'm lining up a big one for next week.
I can get Wiz, Ray Whitney, Brendan Morrow. I'd like to get Mike Cameron on, who has a great story of our trip to Pebble Beach. It's probably about a 15 minute story, but it's...
Is he any good at telling stories?
Oh, it's good.
Okay, it's good. All right. I want to hear it. Bring the microphone down to the tree bar there or wherever at the golf course.
But then we're gonna have birds and people coming by. Like, you're going to have...
That's an upgrade from you, though.
Birds and people coming by. You're going to have background noise. And you know how Steve is about background noise.
Yeah, he's twitchy. He's a little twitchy. Carry on, Rusty. Go do what you do best. Okay, and we'll talk to everybody next week.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Cortinel in LA. A new episode every Tuesday morning on Wooshka, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.